Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1357, we feature three stories by new Life Rattle writer Amina Abdelwahab. Amina Abdelwahab, born in 1996 in Egypt, is the elder of two daughters. Raised on Led Zeppelin, Emily Dickinson, and Margaret Mitchell, her soul never meshed well with the busy Cairo streets. Bullied through high school, Amina developed and battled an eating disorder. 14 diaries and 2 30-pound dumbbells were her salvation. She graduated as valedictorian of her class. Amina Abdelwahab moved to Canada with her family in 2014. She now studies writing in Toronto and hauls equipment around as a DJ's assistant on the weekend. In her free time, she sings, deadlifts, and adds entries to her 15th diary. Amina Abdelwahab's prose cuts cleanly through the repression that smothers the woman depicted in her stories, set in contemporary Egypt. In the world she depicts, the narrator's determination and strength fiercely opposes the expected and established position of a woman as powerless. Tonight's first story has a young woman visiting her overwhelmed grandmother, who, at the beck and call of her ailing husband and her own mother, scrambles to keep everyone settled. Despite a surface of passivity, Grandma reveals a striking autonomy. Let's listen now as Amina Abdelwahab reads her story, Ring, 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 tonight on Life Rattle.
Ring, Ring, Ring by Amina Abdelwahab. Niveen, Grandpa calls out for Grandma. Ring, ring, ring. Niveen, he calls again. My grandpa sits on an ancient lazy boy chair beside two tables covered in medicine. The bell he uses to beckon Grandma sits in his lap. His belly strains the buttons of his blue striped pajamas. I perch on the edge of my grandparents' king-size bed. It is separated down the middle by a line of magazines, newspapers, and two pairs of glasses with thick, dark rims. A dozen cushions make a hill on his side of the bed. I look out the window over Grandpa's shoulder. The Egyptian flag hangs from a building on the opposite side of the Nile. I stay silent. Niveen! Ring, ring, ring. I'm coming, she says. Grandma hobbles into the room in her patterned galabeya. She always wears a different one, but they all look the same to me. Long, loose dresses with long, loose sleeves. Her short hair, half gray, half dyed blonde, stands up like the bristles of a broom. Green eyeliner outlines her hazel eyes and brings out the wrinkles in her cheeks. She holds a glass of water in her hand. Hi, Amina. Habibti, how are you? We don't see you anymore. Aisha always comes over, but you never do. Can I get you anything to eat? She places the glass of water on the table by the medicine and begins to pop tablets into little cups. One for his heart medication, one for his blood pressure medication, and one for his painkillers. My grandfather takes them like my dad takes his tequila. Naveen married Grandpa when she was 18. She never went to university or college. Grandpa was the Egyptian ambassador, and so they traveled the world. She told me stories about all the grand dinners she held at their homes in Chile and New York and London. I know, Naveen. I'm sorry. I just have so much work at school. I give her a weak excuse. Middle school work is easy, and I spend most of my time reading the Harry Potter series. It's okay. Are you going to run a few errands with me today? I have to get your grandpa his bread from hypermarket, his fish from Carrefour, and his medicine from the Fifth Settlement. These stores are all so far. I don't understand why he can't eat food that comes from the same place. Of course, I can help you carry a few things, I say through a crooked smile. I don't want to go. Okay, give me a few minutes. I'll just give Grandpa his shot, and I'll be right out. Naveen, a soft, weak voice calls from another room. It's my great-grandmother. She's 90 years old and never moves from her couch. Naveen, she calls again. I'm coming, Mom. I'm coming. I'm giving Muhammad his shot, Grandma calls back. I leave the room and shut the paint-chipped door behind me. It squeaks. A deep, hollow cry escapes from my grandparents' bedroom. I fiddle with a porcelain plate that Grandma painted. Two hummingbirds stand on a tree branch looking at each other. I think they are best friends. I put the plate back on the antique counter. A giant grandfather clock stares at me from across the room. Every time the big hand hits 12, it chimes like a funeral bell. It reminds me of Grandpa's bell for Naveen. My grandfather has leg paralysis, is diabetic, and thinks he has cancer. My great-grandmother, Zuzi, has amnesia. The door squeaks open. Naveen steps out of the bedroom and wipes her forehead with a handkerchief. She always sweats. Amina, we won't be going to run errands today. Grandpa wants fava beans for dinner, and he can't digest the skin. I have to peel them. I'll help, I say. Thank you, Habibti. She walks over to an ebony chair and sits down. Naveen, the soft voice calls again. Coming, Grandma says. She places a chubby hand on each knee and pushes herself up. She wobbles past me to Zuzi's room. I stand in the living room. The grandfather clock ticks. Naveen! Ring, ring, ring. Coming, she yells. Yes, Grandpa, I say as I push the door open and stick my head inside the bedroom. Get me Naveen. Naveen is busy. Can I help you? I stand at the door. Get me Naveen. She is busy right now, and she can't do everything. What can I get you? Nothing, he says. I turn away and shut the door behind me. Naveen and I sit at the kitchen table peeling fava beans. One by one, we pop the bean out of the rough skin into a bowl. How's school, Amina? Fine. Why does Grandpa have to eat fava beans if he can't digest the skin? Why doesn't he eat something else? I look at the glove of fava bean goo that has formed on my hand. I shudder. Because that's the way it is. I try to get him to eat other things, but you know your grandfather. She wipes the sweat off her brow. I know, but still, why doesn't he peel them himself then? Niveen looks at me like I'm stupid. Amina, men are not to be argued with. You just do what they say and then do whatever you want later. Just don't tell them. You know our house in Ain al-Sukhna? I do. We go stay there every summer. It's a 3-story luxury home on the beach. He didn't want it built, but I did it anyway, without telling him. It was only after I was done and told him about it that he agreed that it was a good idea. Really? I said. I wasn't shocked. Niveen hides things like this all the time. She never tells Grandpa or Zuzi anything, and she makes me keep the secrets too. Really? She squeezes the last bean into the bowl. Finally, I say, you should rest now, Grandma. You've been up all day. I'll clean up. Thank you. Niveen drags herself out of the kitchen chair, washes her hands, and leaves the kitchen. I gather the dishes and toss the pile of fava bean skins into the garbage. I'm glad Grandma is going to get some rest. Niveen! I hear Grandpa's voice. Ring, ring, ring.
That was Amina Abdelwahab reading her story, Ring, Ring, Ring. Amina's second story begins with an almost dreamy early morning arrival at school. A chilling twist plunges us into a harrowing assault in the middle school bathroom. And because of her gender, the narrator is forced to consider that she will likely be judged as the guilty one. Let's listen now as Amina Abdelwahab reads her story, Sharmuta, tonight on Life Rattle.
Sharmuta by Amina Abdelwahab. Another September morning in my first month of middle school at El Alsan. At 7 a.m., the empty hallways greet my footsteps with a soothing resonance. Soft murmurs escape from the staff room as I pass, along with the aroma of freshly brewed coffee. The sun peeks through the window panes. Click, clack, the lock collapses into my hand as I spin the code into the locker's dial. I use my finger to scan over the day's class schedule. I have English, math, and French. Should I take A Midsummer Night's Dream or Macbeth to English class? Mom had an early meeting, so she dropped me off at school on her way to work. An early morning means I avoid Lena, the locker hog, Sally with the snaky S and the squeaky voice, and her recent to-be, Ali, the school jock. The three always walk together at the head of a line of drooling fans. Lena's belly jiggles as she T-Rexes along the locker lines, often with a sandwich in her hand. She urges people to take a bite in bursts of roars and vulgar laughter. Sally stops to fawn over Ali in the corner by the arcaded entrance, her uniform hugging her water ballet sculpted figure. Sally's high-pitched voice competes with Lena's roars. Ali postures himself with an arm flanked over his head so his bicep flexes, and one muscled leg curled behind the other as he leans against the locker, flirting with a smile and wink. Everybody loves Lena. The girls want to be Sally, and the boys want to be Ali. I hate them all. They are everything I never want to be. Footsteps clump in the empty hallway, and then a gurgle of spit, followed by a loud splat. Raouf struts towards me in his latest Lacoste outfit. He smirks as he picks up his pace. I let my books fall to the floor and zip up the stairwell, down the hallway, into the girls' bathroom, and down to the farthest stall behind a thick concrete wall. I stand like a statue. You think you can hide from me, you bitch? I can already feel him touching me. He thinks he owns me. He thinks he owns me because he can buy all of Egypt, and so he can have me, just like he's told me before. I want him to go away. Please. Please, I beg. I've begged before. No one ever hears me. No one ever listens, because to them, it's my fault. It's always my fault. I'm a girl. He enters the bathroom. Hot tears rush down my cheeks. My hands quiver against the cold concrete as I place them on both sides of the stall and lift myself onto the toilet without a sound. I curl into a ball and hug my knees. My heartbeat races. You think you can run, baby? Slam! He kicks the first door open. It bangs against the wall and creaks back. I shriek. Slam! The second door. Two more left. I whimper. I press my head harder against my knees. Slam! The third. His footsteps back up, and then he hurls himself at my door. Slam! The door blows a gust of air as it swings open. Raouf fills the doorway. He drags me off the toilet and rams me into the wall. He traps my body with his weight. Something hard presses into my pelvis. It hurts. His face looms an inch from mine. His breath lingers on my cheek. One of his gorilla hands fastens my own to the ice-cold wall. He grazes his lips across my neck and stops at my ear. You better fucking please me this time, you understand? Never, I croak. Oh, I'll show you. You're a sharmuta, just like the rest of them, baby. Sharmuta drills into my mind as he presses me harder against the wall. I remember the time when Abu Lil thought I was a whore because I have blonde hair and green eyes. I remember the time when my father scolded me for being a whore because how dare the daughter of Ali Abdel Wahab come home at 9 p.m. I am a sharmuta, born a sharmuta. I have never been touched by a boy, except Raouf. He glides his filthy hands over my stomach, my ass, and my breasts. I struggle to loosen his grip, but I am too weak. I try to scream, but I lose my voice. I hiccup as tears flow down my cheeks. It's not the first time. Heels clack towards the bathroom. Raouf freezes with his hands locked under my shirt. His heavy breath hovers over my skin. He releases his grip. Don't you say a fucking word. You understand me? I nod. He disappears. I listen to his scurrying footsteps fade away. I sigh and move towards the mirrors. Electric hairs fuzz out in all directions and fading red fingerprints mark my cheeks. I fix my yellow uniform top and navy blue pants. I whisper thanks and pray there won't be a next time. Miss Sam, my English teacher, prances into the bathroom on her black stiletto pumps. Her short beige skirt ruffles as she speaks. Good morning, Amina. How are you today? Are you ready for today's class? We're going to read the second chapter of Macbeth. I'm fine, I mumble back. I am not fine. My hands still shake. My head thumps. I draw a curtain of hair to hide my battered face and look away from her. I stumble down the staircase back to my locker and pick up Macbeth from the floor. Tears silently edge down the sides of my bruised cheeks. My eyes blur as I walk to room 102 and cringe in my seat at the back of the bustling classroom. It's not the last time.
That was Amina Abdelwahab reading her story, Sharmuta. Our final story tonight focuses its examination of gender power imbalance on the nuclear family. A young woman must risk leaving behind her sister and endure the violence of her father's storm of rage as she embarks with her mother to a new country for the promise of fresh opportunity. Let's listen now as Amina Abdelwahab reads her story, The Elevator.
The Elevator by Amina Abdelwahab. Get into the fucking elevator. You're going back to Canada, whether you like it or not. My father stampedes towards my sister. His face crunches and his lips tighten. A swollen vein snakes down his neck. Ali, if she wants to stay, let her stay, shouts my mother from across the bedroom where she fumbles with last-minute papers. Her red-dyed hair dances over her eyes. She curses at the air. Suitcases and bags clutter the floor, and plastic sheets cover our beds to protect them from dust while we are away. Aisha, my sister, curls into a ball in the corner of the room. Her body convulses with every hiccup she makes between each sob and squeal. Her eyes are bloodshot, and her face is puffy. Aisha never cries. Aisha is 15, and I am 18. She was forced to move to Canada with Mom last year. I stayed in Egypt with Dad for my last year of school. It's the end of the summer vacation, and this time, I'm moving too. I'm not going, Aisha wails from her corner. Why should I be forced to do this shit again? You said 1 year, and I did it. You liars. I hate you. I hate you. Her wails echo off the walls and pierce my ears. I hurry to stand between Aisha and Dad. His beer belly flops over his checkered boxer shorts as he approaches. His bald head makes his brown eyes look even smaller. "Don't you dare touch her," I say. I cement my feet to the ground and bend my arms back like a boomerang. I've done this before. 2 years ago, Dad stumbled into our room in the middle of the night, dragged Aisha out of the bed, and slurred broken curses at her. The ruckus woke me. Aisha's stark, hard face was inches away from our father's. I dove between them and took my boomerang position. Aisha ran out to our grandmother's, and I took my father's yells instead. I didn't care. I still don't. My father's gaze burns into mine. Through tight lips, he snarls, "Get out of the fucking way. I am her father, you little shit." He clamps his hands together behind his back. He does that to stop himself from hitting us. It never works. I don't give a shit. I'm not moving. Aisha peeks out from behind me and takes a step towards my father. I watch. She gestures at me to step back and looks up at my father with narrowed eyes. She points a finger at him. "You're not my father," she says. Her face boils red. "You cheated on my mother and you tried to kill my dogs. You're not my father." Blood-red veins swell in my father's eyes. His feet stay fastened to the ground. He squeezes his fists. My sister flees to my grandmother's apartment, leaving behind a trail of teardrops and wails. Mom lets silent tears fall. I move towards my mother and pat her on the back while my dad grumbles. He storms out of the room. "Mom," I whisper, "how come you want Aisha to stay?" "Amina, I've been through so much these past 2 years. You know that. Between finding out your father cheated on me, him not coming to Canada with me last year, and you staying here with him, I feel like I'm pushing this Canada thing for nothing. I just wanted the best for you all." She sits on the light parquet floor with her legs crossed. Her eyes focus on the ground. She holds a tissue to her nose and sniffles. "It's not for nothing. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be able to go to the University of Toronto. Aisha is young still, but you gave her the chance to get a good education. And maybe it's for the best that you are far from Dad. You need the space." I look at Mom with a crooked smile and then drop my gaze to the ground. I can't stand to see her cry. I remember when we used to gather in Dad's study room on Fridays. We would dance around, slam on our air guitars to AC/DC, and laugh about Mom's taste in music. Everything has changed. A tear crawls down my cheek, and I smear it onto the sleeve of my shirt. Mom sits on the floor and cries. I want to help. I brush away my thoughts, beef my shoulders back, and sigh. I'm going across the hall to talk to Aisha while you pack the last few things, okay? I pat her on the back. She nods. I sweat the moment I walk into my grandmother's apartment. My grandmother, Niveen, never uses an air conditioner. I pass the stout antique table that holds a pink ceramic dove, a few gross coasters, and an old porcelain plate. I open another door and see my sister and grandmother in the living room. They argue. I interrupt them. Aisha, you have to come, I say. Be reasonable. You did what you wanted to do. You put him on the spot. It's time to go. I sink into the vomit green couch. Sweat and tears coat my face. I don't like this house. It smells like rotting socks, and the only light comes from a single dim bulb. Convoluted rugs cover every inch of the floor. Aisha, go, Naveen says, hunched beneath the fabric of her long galabeya that looks as if someone has splattered paint on it. Her hands edge out of the loose sleeves. You won't enjoy living with your father, she says. You can't make me go. I can live with you, Grandma. Yes, I can, Dad's voice thunders from our apartment. His footsteps drum against the floor. Aisha and I jump towards the front door and out into the hallway. Naveen limps behind us. Mom opens the door of our apartment. The two front doors face each other. I can see my father's shadow growing with his every step. Dad takes the hallway in two strides, shoves me out of his way, and grabs my sister by the arm. I fall back against the wall. Ali, don't, my grandmother says. Ali, leave her, Mom pleads. Dad, please, no, I cry. Dad can't hear or see or think. He whips Aisha around by the arm, pulls her down the hall to the elevator door, and flings her in while she struggles and cries and kicks the air. Mom drags suitcases into the hallway, suitcases she stains with tears. I slide my back down the wall and I press my knees to my chest. I give up.
That was Amina Abdelwahab reading her story, The Elevator. This concludes Life Rattle number 1357. My name is Lori Callis. I had the pleasure of recording Amina reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week for a Life Rattle classic show hosted by Virginia Ashbury.